Thank you. Thank you. Sri Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Prabhupada Chaujasto Tarasata Sri Srimad Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Sarasati Thakur Maharaj Srila Prabhupada
Jaya
Ananta Gaudi Vaishnava Rindiki
Jaya
ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada
Jaya
Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki
Jaya
Brimsekahotri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adargarara Srivasari Gaur Bhakta Rindiki
Jaya
Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kundarar Gandagiri Gopadhan ki
jai
Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham ki
jai
Shri Shri Navadvip Dham ki
jai
Shri Shri Mayapodham ki
jai
Shri Shri Mathura Dham ki
jai
Jagannath Puri Dham ki
jai
Tulasi Devi ki
jai
Bhakti Devi ki
jai
Jamuna Maya ki
jai
Ganga Maya ki
jai
Gaur Premanande
Hari
Nama Sankirtan ki
jai
Shri Shri Brihadmridanga ki
jai
Transcendental Vrishadam Distribution Ki
Jai,
Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki
Jai,
Shri Shri Panchatattva Ki
Jai,
Bristol Jatra Ki
Jai,
Shama Veta Bhakta Vrinda Ki
Jai,
all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Guru.
All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Guru.
What verse?
19.
We say the verses?
Yes.
Recite like Bhagavatam, please. Karmani Akarma Ya Pashyet
Karmani
Sha Karma Ya Sa Budiman Anusheshu Sa Yukta Krishna Karma Krit Karmanya Karma Ya Pashyet Karmanya Karma Ya Pashyet Akarmani chakarmaya Akarmani chakarmaya
Akarmani chakarmaya
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sayukta krishna karma krit
Sayukta krishna karma
krit
Sayukta krishna karma krit
Karmanya karma ya pashyet. Akarmani cha karma ya. Sabudhiman manusheshu.
Sabudhiman manusheshu.
Sayukta krishna karma krit.
Sayukta krishna karma krit.
Karmanya karma ya pashyet.
Karmanya karma ya
Akarmani cha karma ya
Akarmani cha karma ya
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sayukta krishna karma krit
Sayukta krishna karma krit
Karmanya karma ya
pashyet
Karmanya karma ya pashyet Akarmani cha karma ya Akarmani cha karma ya
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sabudhiman manusheshu
Sayukta krishna kama krit
Sayukta krishna kama krit Karmani.
Karmani.
In action.
In action.
Akarma.
Akarma.
In action.
In action.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One who.
Pashyet.
Pashyet. Chev.
Observes. Akarmani.
Akarmani.
In inaction.
In inaction.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Karma.
Karma.
Root of action.
Root of action.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One who.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Budhiman.
Budhiman.
Is intelligent.
Manusheshu.
Manusheshu. In human society.
In human society.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Yuktaha.
Yuktaha.
Is in the transcendental position.
Is in the transcendental position.
Vitsnakamakrit.
Vitsnakamakrit.
Although engaged in all activities.
Although engaged in all activities.
One who sees inaction in action, and action in inaction, is intelligent among men. And he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. This is Translations and Purports of Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
That was the verse, and this is the purport by Srila Prabhupada. A person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. His activities are all performed for Krishna. Therefore, he does not enjoy or suffer any of the effects of work. Consequently, he is intelligent in human society, even though he is engaged in all sorts of activities for Krishna. Akarma means without reaction to work. The impersonalist ceases fruitive activities out of fear, so that the resultant action may not be a stumbling block on the path of self-realization. But the personalist knows rightly his position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Because everything is done for Krishna, he enjoys only transcendental happiness in the discharge of the service, of this service. Those who are engaged in this process are known to be without desire for personal sense gratification. The sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna makes one immune to all sorts of reactionary elements of work. Om Gyanati Manandasya Garananjana Salakaya Chaksurin Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. There's a principle enunciated by Rupa Goswami which says that to give up work or to give up anything in the form of renunciation for spiritual life is incomplete renunciation. One who is able to engage his active senses and acts and objects, activities in works of devotion is on a higher stage, is situated above renunciation. So therefore, one continues to act. Krishna consciousness means action. But that action is not for our own senses, it's not for to fulfill our own desires, whatever they may be, to increase our material wants or our material situation, to better it, to improve it, but to improve our situation as the servant of Krishna. All living entities are parts and parcel of Krishna. And we have a relationship with Krishna as Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, as his eternal servants. So this activity done in the service of Krishna may appear like inaction or non-activity for someone who is expecting results and who is working for his own advancement. It may seem that a devotee is working very hard but not gaining anything personally, not getting a better material situation. So it appears to be inaction or useless action to someone who is bent on increasing the material facilities of life, better home, better salary, better job, better family, better friends, better world. And we'll see that Krishna consciousness means escaping into a world of unreality, working very hard to appear to engage in deeper spiritual rhapsodies or mystical experiences. That's that vision of someone who is materially absorbed. Hare Krishna. But it's this action for Krishna, although it seems to be inaction, is action that is bringing about a greater result. It's regenerating our ability to progress, to advance in life. It's regenerating our energy. Energy is dissipated with every day of our lives. Every day that goes by, there's a description in the fourth canto, in the story, the allegory of King Puranjan, how the days and nights are like Gandharvas. Gandharvas are sometimes described or viewed as mystical beings who are invisible. So it's said in the Bhagavatam that there are 360 of these Gandharvas, signifying the days of the year. They're like soldiers which attack, but they're invisible because one doesn't see or perceive the days going by. From the moment birth takes place, death is getting closer and closer and closer. So aging means growing towards death, and birth means the beginning of death. So time is going by very quickly, and energy is dissipating. Energy is very strong up to maybe 20 or 30 years, and then it begins to dissipate in a human being. But in spiritual existence, energy is regenerated. One becomes stronger and stronger and stronger spiritually. And it enables a person to engage in devotional service and deepen one's devotion to Krishna and one's service to Krishna up into old age, even when the body is weak, because it becomes affected by the spiritual spark, which is growing and growing. Activity increases and devotional service deepens and increases. So this action, in what appears to be inaction, which is not producing anything material, is producing the best result. It's producing love for Krishna, which is the goal of life. It's producing knowledge of how to serve Krishna, which is the goal of life. It's making us more Krishna conscious and preparing us for our natural life in the spiritual world, where one does not work and struggle to become masterful or to become the master of all one surveys. The spiritual world, everybody is very busy serving Krishna, singing for Krishna, preparing foods for Krishna, dancing with Krishna, taking care of Krishna, doing so many different types of things that are intimate relationships with Krishna, that are deepening these relationships. So our action in this material world as devotees is to prepare for that time when we can return to our original, natural, normal, happy condition of life, which is with Krishna in the spiritual world. Not this abnormal, temporary, sometimes happy, sometimes not happy condition in the material world. This is not escaping to a distant world for personal salvation. And it's not selfishness. Selfishness is to accumulate things, to want more, and to do so at the expense of others. And selflessness, true selflessness, is not just to live in the woods under a tree, wearing a tree bark or sitting on a deerskin, but real selflessness is to engage all of one's desires, all of one's activities, all of one's possessions. This is the ultimate service, the ultimate happiness, to engage everything we do in this. We have to latch on to the devotee of Krishna, who is already liberated himself from this material world. Then it is possible. So this is achieved by devotion. Bhaktyaman Yavijanati Yavanyas Chashmitatvata Tattvaman Tattvato Gyatva Vishate Tarantaram Bhaktyamam Avijanati. By practicing this, the Bhagavad Gita says, one develops a sense of devotional service. By doing devotional service, one develops a sense of who Krishna is. And from this knowledge, knowing who Krishna is, we begin to develop a taste for going back to the spiritual world, developing love for Krishna. Krishna says, I can only be known as I am through devotional service, through acts of service, through acts of love and devotion. Not simply platitudes by saying that I love God. But love means that one has to act. This is the action in inaction. One has to actually act. If we offer something to Krishna, if we sing and glorify Krishna, if we think about Krishna, if we offer our respects to Krishna, that activity is the way our love develops, because it's a demonstration of love. In the material world, when we engage in an act of love, we want something in return. We want some form of protection. We want some kind of sense gratification. We want some things. We want to get something back to better our material situation. When we serve Krishna in devotional service, by worshiping him or by propagating his teachings, which is one of the things that Krishna stresses that he wants done. We aren't doing something for our material situation. And this will appear like inactivity or activity which doesn't bring a result. But the result is the real result. It brings the greatest result because it actually brings us awareness of who Krishna is. Who am I? Where I come from? Where I'm going? So Prabhupada explains here that there is karma. One becomes free from karma by devotional service. Karma means the web or the network of action and reaction. It means that we come into this world with a history of many lifetimes of sinful activity that we have to suffer for. Even if we don't do anything, we still have to live out these reactions. Or if we've engaged in positive activity, pious activity, we have a certain amount of good fortune that will come. When one engages in devotional service, all of this karmic activity disappears, and one is no longer living under these laws of karma. Karma is a higher order law of the universe, just as we see there are laws that cause the seasons to change, and there's the law of gravity, the law of growth and dissolution and birth. These are all insurmountable laws. It is said that the laws of nature cannot be overcome. Similarly, the law of karma cannot be overcome. We have to undergo some pains and some pleasures due to our past lives. As soon as the process of devotional service begins, these karmic reactions are nullified, and one enters into a direct relationship with Krishna. Karma is acting under Krishna's law or under Krishna's order as an agent of Krishna. But when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're no longer acting under the laws which are here to maintain the material world and to mete out justice and injustice, but we are directly relating with the supreme authority, the lawgiver of the whole universe, the controller of the entire cosmic situation. In the material world, there's a similar situation. The courts mete out justice according to their laws. But the head of the state is in a position to absolve or to intervene in the courts and grant, I think, some special dispensation. I think there was something here called the Sword of Mercy when the prisoners were being brought to the tower. If they could escape from the guards and run up and touch the Sword of Mercy, they could be absolved. And of course, there are many instances of the king intervening on behalf of someone who is to be executed. So Krishna is very merciful if one begins the process of devotional service, a relationship with Krishna begins, and the laws of karma are cut away, and immediately one enters into a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. And he is ready to and willing to not only forgive all of our past activities, which in our ignorance have been against the laws of Krishna, against the Supreme Authority, but willing to allow us to enter into the most intimate forms of relationship, and beyond that, to relish this relationship. Because the relationship of Krishna is the ultimate loving relationship. As we, some of us may have read in the Krishna book in the beginning, we're all seeking the perfect relationship. We're all seeking the perfect person to love. From our childhood, it begins. We love our parents. We want to please them. If we do something that makes them smile, we're very happy. As we grow, we want our friends become very, very valuable to us. And as we grow beyond that, we may want special types of relationships with groups of people. We may want to do good work for our nation or our community. But always relationships are necessary. Even in old age, one wants to please somebody. We want to please our children or our grandchildren. We want to see other people pleased by our actions. So we're always looking for relationships that are satisfying. Whether we articulate it or not, we're looking for a perfect relationship. That's the nature of human life. So Krishna provides this. One of the many benedictions that come from engaging in devotional service is that Krishna gives us a direct relationship with Him. And once one begins that relationship, all other relationships pale in comparison. At the same time, once our relationship with Krishna begins, then there's the feeling of love for all living beings equally. Even those we don't know, even the dogs and cats and plants become lovable because they are seen as related to Krishna, as servants of Krishna, and we see Krishna within all of them. They're souls like we are, and they have a relationship with Krishna. They have an original relationship of love with Krishna. And they need to evolve in the spiritual evolutionary scale to higher and higher life forms until they can meet the Supreme Lord and live with Him in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everything is happiness, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. No deterioration, no death. So this is what everyone actually wants. Everyone wants to be happy without any cessation. Everyone wants eternity. Everyone would like to be complete in knowledge. When Krishna liberates the living being and allows the living entity to return to Him in the spiritual world, He bestows upon them all these boons: eternity, knowledge, and bliss. These are the constituents of life in the material world, spiritual world, I mean, Satchidananda. Knowledge, eternity, and bliss. So it's an active principle, always active. The Bhagavad Gita instructs us in this, and the overall action of the Bhagavad Gita is great activity, a battle, in fact. So Krishna is instructing Arjuna that you have to act. You can't sit and meditate. At least this is not recommended for this day and age in the Vedas. There are different processes of developing devotional service in different times and places. Especially in this age, when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken at the beginning of this age, we are meant for acting in the service of Krishna, because this age is very busy, very noisy. Quarrels spring up over minute things, over trifles. The 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is very wonderful because it predicts, like many of the Vedas do, things of the future. It explains that in this age, this book was compiled and recorded 5,000 years ago, people would get justice in the court only according to how much money they could pay. It was described that people would grow their hair long to look beautiful. It's described that there would be, over trifles, there would be great quarrel. It's also mentioned that the institution of marriage would deteriorate and relationships would be based on superficial things, that they would not last. And in the later parts of this age, of this yuga, things get much worse. The stature of human beings is reduced to 3 or 4 feet. There's very little water. It's impossible to find drinking water, or to speak of bathing. Bathing water is very difficult to find, very hard to find drinking water. The fruits become, the pips and the fruits become very big, and there's only a little bit of skin and a tiny bit of fruit around them. There's great scarcity everywhere. Human beings become reduced to savage-like creatures. They eat their own offspring. They become almost like beasts. And they resort to eating almost only grass. It's very hot all day long. There's almost no relief from the heat. And the lifespan is very short. When someone reaches the age of 20 or 25, that person is considered a very grand old man or woman. So these are described as symptoms of the age. After another 427,000 years, it gets very, very, very bad. So in this age, because it's fraught with all sorts of difficulties, we're given the very easy process of engaging in devotional acts to Krishna, beginning with chanting Krishna's name. And if one can organize one's life in such a way that one thinks of Krishna, by having pictures of Krishna in the home, by offering food to Krishna, by chanting Krishna's names as much as possible, by associating with Krishna's devotees, by visiting Krishna's places of worship, by reading Krishna's books, surrounding your house with pictures of Krishna, burning incense, having an altar, all these things. One begins to think of Krishna all the time. When one begins to think of Krishna more and more, the next stage is that one wants to become a devotee of Krishna. We recognize ourselves, we think of ourselves as devotees of Krishna. This becomes our main identity. Who am I? Well, I may be doing many things in my life, in my work or with my family, but I'm a devotee of Krishna. One makes this kind of internal commitment. I become a devotee of Krishna, and I follow the procedures to become officially a devotee of Krishna and cultivate that relationship. Once one becomes a devotee of Krishna, one is constantly engaged in serving Krishna. Man manavavam bhakto madhyajinam namaskaru. One worships Krishna, and by this act of worshiping, we begin to understand who Krishna is. Our relationship becomes thicker and thicker. And as we begin to worship Krishna, we're constantly offering our obeisances to Krishna. Every time we see Krishna's picture, his devotee, we want to humble ourselves before Krishna. This increases our humility. And when our humility becomes more and more prominent, we're able to love Krishna unimpeded. We're able to love Krishna without wanting something or thinking that we're important. So this is all action. Action in the service of Krishna. Also, one who is a devotee of Krishna doesn't work unnecessarily hard. Some people work 12, 15, 16 hours a day. A devotee works enough to, as Prabhupada said, keep body and soul together. But not so much. Because in the end, we have to, no matter how much we accumulate, we have to give it all up. So one who's a devotee of Krishna will save enough time in one's life to engage in Krishna's service, to engage in acts of devotion. That time is organized in such a way that we save time and simplify our lives. People are trying to simplify their lives nowadays. They want to try to get back to a more basic form of life, organic farming, disposable things. But it's very difficult to live simply in this age, in these cities, because life has become very complicated. We depend on so many technological advancements just to stay warm in the winter, just to get back and forth from where we'd have to go. But people want that. So if we start in the realm of our consciousness, making our minds more simple, our desires more simple, our wants more simple, our relationships and our lifestyle more simple, then we can gradually begin to make the whole world simpler. At least we can be more simple. And we won't have to work very hard night and day for results which are temporary and ultimately not satisfying. If we do something for Krishna, this will regenerate all our energy. We give something to Krishna's movement, or do something for Krishna's devotee, or in some way advance the cause of Krishna consciousness. That will enliven us. Our whole consciousness will become on fire spiritually. And this will give us energy and the intelligence on how to simplify our life and prepare for ultimately leaving this material body and going back to the spiritual world to live with Krishna. That's what life is meant for. That's what human life is meant for. That's the inaction, the material inaction that we engage in. We're engaging in Krishna's service. Materially, it's inactive. But spiritually, it's fully active, because it brings us that much closer to the spiritual world. Krishna is eager to help us. It's not that we have to go it alone back to the spiritual world and slave away, as we do in the material world, to get a higher position, to advance along the path. But Krishna is helping us at every step. Krishna says, Yayatamam papadyante tamstitaiva vajamyam mamavartam sankhe manusha partha sarvashaha. Exactly as we move towards Krishna and surrender ourselves to Him, He accordingly rewards us. And He gives us the intelligence, the dhammi buddhi yogam. He gives us from within, in the heart, He dictates how we can advance, how we can move towards Him, what's required to do it. So when we make that commitment to move towards Krishna, He will help us. Krishna helps. Krishna claims to be Pitamam Sarva Bhutanam, the father of all living beings. So fathers naturally want to help their children. That's their nature. They want to see them happy. They make great sacrifices so that they can advance in life, so that they can have a good future. And that is Krishna's nature and His way of thinking of the living entities. That's His inclination. He's always beckoning to come to me, please come to me. Unfortunately, in this material world, everyone is moving in the opposite direction. And Krishna doesn't force anyone, because He's a loving father, and He wants everyone to have the opportunity to engage in loving devotional service. Devotional service means love. But when one follows that direction, when one heeds to the call of Krishna and starts to move towards Him, then Krishna is there immediately to help. And then real action takes place, action towards the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada writes, those who are engaged in this process are known to be without desire for personal sense gratification. So one becomes free from the actions of karma as soon as one is free from wanting something for oneself. Then the reactions are gone, and Krishna actually manifests Himself within the heart of the devotee. Through His holy name, we sense His presence, and through association with His devotees. So I'll stop here. I'll read this once more, and then we can have some discussion. Kamanya karma ya pashyet, akarma nicha karma ya, sabudhi mam manushyeshu, sa yuktakritsna karma. One who sees inaction in action, and action in inaction, is intelligent among men. And he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Prabhupada also mentioned in this purport that those who think that God is everything and one, they are afraid to engage in devotional service because they want to become one with their equal to Krishna. But the devotee or the personalist only wants to be Krishna's servant. He wants to engage in acts of service and be less than Krishna, be smaller than Krishna. Do you have any questions or comments?
Saying that immediately devotional service begins, karma is nullified, is that? I just wondered if it was took place before one actually accepted a spiritual master.
Prabhupada uses the example of the fan. Karma is like the fan or the wheel of action, reaction, turning and churning. It's always going. And when one engages in devotional service, it's as if the electric current is broken, the switch is turned off, and the fan continues to spin for some time. So it's not instantaneously, as our devotional service, and devotional service is also not instantaneous. It begins slowly, slowly, gradually, and then finally one passes through various stages and one comes to the point of being without desire for sense gratification, or absorbed night and day completely in love of God. Thinking about Krishna at every moment, even during one's sleep. So at that stage, there's no karma. But karma, the actions of karma begin to wind down. And when one makes a commitment to Krishna consciousness, especially at the time of initiation, one's taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, and he's actually directing the life of a devotee. And karmic reaction is no longer acting.
You're free of karma at that moment.
You're free of karma. Sometimes there's some exceptions where there's some reactions, small reactions. Prabhupada described these reactions as being token reactions. He told us once that he was in a train accident, very bad accident, which all the cars were derailed and lots of people were killed. And he simply felt that he switched seats. There was almost no sense of there being an accident. He explains that this was a token reaction, that in ordinary circumstances he would have been killed. But because he was a devotee, he just got the token reaction. So a devotee understands that if there's some accident or some misfortune, it's actually just a tiny token, a small percentage of what would have happened if he hadn't been a devotee of Krishna. So in this way, karma is stopped, but not suddenly, not instantaneously. But at the time of initiation in general, our karmic reaction is stopped. You don't have your karmic reaction here. Of course, you have to stay surrendered to Krishna. Initiation is just the beginning. It means beginning. The word means beginning. One has to continue to develop and increase from that point on. Otherwise, the karma can revive again. It's not a rubber stamp that you get initiated and then no more karma ever again. The acts of devotion have to continue also.
Is there such a thing as Krishna karma?
It's not karma, because whatever Krishna does, if some misfortune overtakes us, that's actually Krishna bringing us closer to him. Therefore, Queen Kunti prayed for misfortune in the Srimad Bhagavatam. She said, if you can just continue to give me so many misfortunes, more and more, in that way I'll be able to see your lotus feet. So when one is in Krishna consciousness, misfortune is so-called misfortune or karma is seen as good fortune. So we may call it Krishna karma, but it's actually not karma. I mean, in the usual sense of the word karma, we can say it's Krishna karma because it's Krishna activity. We say karma is activity, but it's not karma based on the material laws of action and reaction. What happens is being directed to us, is being directed by Krishna. And that's why misfortune is not viewed as misfortune. Misfortune means that the laws of nature are punishing us, to reform us, and to make us suffer so that we will become absolved from our sinful actions, from the reactions to those sinful actions. But when misfortune, apparent misfortune takes place when we're devotees, we see it as an impetus. That was just a token reaction. And actually, I've been put in this position so I can meditate more deeply on Krishna. And at the same time, if good fortune comes our way, we don't think, aha, now my material problems are solved, and I don't have to work so hard, but I think, now I've been granted some good fortune, some good facility. How can I use this in the service of Krishna? How can I improve my service to Krishna? Otherwise, if I become euphoric over my newfound wealth or newfound situation, it's more than likely I'll be less inclined to think about Krishna because the fever of sense enjoyment will have increased. So either way, whatever happens, good or bad, the devotee has to be sober enough to see it as an impetus for serving Krishna and to be able to use misfortune as well as fortune, good fortune, in a service to Krishna. That's steady evenness. That's inaction. When good things happen, we utilize them in the service of Krishna. We utilize our good fortune. When misfortune occurs, we see it as an advantageous situation to enhance our devotion.
At what point should one come to realize that one is ready for initiation?
Krishna will help you. Krishna will direct you. It's very gradual. There's a Vedic saying that by the grace of Krishna one gets Guru, and by the grace of Guru one gets Krishna. It's a gradual process, and the more you learn about Krishna consciousness, the more you learn what surrendering to Krishna means, and what has to be done, what has not to be done. Because after all, it's a system, it's a science, devotional service. And when one feels ready that one can chant 16 rounds daily, follow four regulated principles every day, and one can go on with one's life like this, then the person is ready, and you're convinced, and you've done it, and you want to do this for the rest of your life, then that's the point at which you can consider making a commitment to follow those things for the rest of your life. That's what Harinam initiation means. That much austerity you have to be committed to. Yes?
Is there such a thing as trying too hard?
Yes.
For instance, I was thinking what you're saying about when a person tries to go towards Krishna, then Krishna will come back. But sometimes you're trying so hard and you're looking and it doesn't seem that it is coming back to you. What is this? Is this Krishna testing one out?
Mm-hmm. Of course, from one perspective, you, no matter what you do for Krishna, it's all to the good because you're trying to please Krishna and you're trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. But it's really a matter of how your activity is being directed, because we all work under the direction of a spiritual master who can read the books about Krishna consciousness and understand what surrender means, what things have to be done, giving certain things up, using things in Krishna's service, being humble, depending on Krishna's mercy, feeling protected by Krishna, and wanting nothing but what Krishna wants, and so many other things about surrender. But we need guidance. We need guidance not only from the spiritual master, the official spiritual master, but from the many devotees who are also our spiritual masters, as to exactly how we should direct our activity. Because we can work very hard and not be working in the right direction. Just as when we were young, we had counselors in school who told us what subjects to take according to our aptitudes. We need a guidance to tell us how to use our energy, what energies to use, what talents and what abilities to use for Krishna. And we also need that feedback to tell us how we are advancing and if we are advancing. Because we may think we are and we may not be. On the other hand, we may think we are not, and we may well be advancing greatly. So Krishna consciousness has an interactive process where we discuss and measure our advancement against the wisdom of those who we consider more advanced than we are. It's a very personal process, devotional service. So the answer is yes, we can over-endeavor and work too hard. That process is mentioned by Rupa Goswami in one of his books, the Upadeshamrita, Vihara Vihara Shah, Vajapa Nima Vaha, Jana Sangha Charolyam Cha. One can become doing too much or over-endeavoring. That's possible. But it's only because we don't have our direction fixed. We don't have the proper guidance. And that's where that comes in. But in general, if we are being guided properly, then if we work hard, that's regenerative, and that's positive, and that will advance our Krishna consciousness. So from that perspective, you can't work too hard for Krishna. But one has to be careful, because even in the devotional service, the process of devotional service, it's possible for one to go without enough sleep or enough eating. That happens sometimes. So Krishna also says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, one has to be temperate in its habits of working, eating, sleeping, and recreation. That's how one perfects the yoga system. And work in moderation. That's one of the verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Is that Dr.
Mm-hmm. Instead of preparing us for the part-time, it's another thing, but because it's not our service system, sometimes when it's very thin,
Sorry, the traffic drowned out the last part of what you said. I didn't hear the last.
Oh, yeah, it says there is one against you, against it.
Yes. So our process is an educational process and a training process by which we do come to know what Krishna looks like and how he responds to us, just as we're talking now. That's the goal of our life. And this is the process of yoga, as you mentioned, which brings us to that point. It doesn't happen instantaneously. It's very easy to, look at you and you can look at me and see some kind of reaction taking place. Of course, I don't know what you're thinking and you don't know what I'm thinking inside. Nonetheless, we can see some action and reaction. So the process of bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness is to develop that same ability to be able to speak with Krishna and interact with Krishna, dance with Krishna, sing with Krishna, just as we're sitting here in this room. That's the goal of this process of Krishna consciousness. Now that doesn't happen overnight because it's not an easy thing. We're so deeply enmeshed within this material world with so many layers of illusion covering us. It takes a long time and a lot of determination to get out of this called the material pool. It's like quicksand. And be able to see reality. It's a higher state of awakeness. This condition is described as a sleeping condition compared to a spiritual existence. And one doesn't awaken from it instantaneously. It's a slow and gradual process. But because we get glimpses into the spiritual world, we feel confident that we can develop a relationship with Krishna. And we know what Krishna looks like by the authorities. Since the knowledge of Krishna comes down through these great spiritual masters, and they've described Krishna's activities and what he looks like and his likes and dislikes and his various other qualities in great detail. And therefore there's so many millions of paintings and sculptures and dramas all about Krishna, fashioned after Krishna. So we know what Krishna looks like. We know he has a beautiful bluish, blackish colored body. And that he plays his flute very beautifully, and his lips are always smiling very brightly, and he speaks very sweetly. He can speak any language to any person or any animal or any bird. He's always giving pleasure to his devotees. He's always making his devotees happy. And his life is full enjoyment, and he lets the living entities serve him in a very intimate way. So these are some of the things we begin to learn about Krishna. And when we think of Krishna, immediately Krishna knows, because he is in the heart of every living being. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam. That's his declaration in this Bhagavad Gita. I'm seated in the heart of all living beings. And he knows the mind of everyone. So Krishna knows our mind completely. You might know my mind partially, I might know your mind partially. But Krishna knows all minds completely. So when we make an endeavor to come to Krishna, or to devote ourselves to Krishna, he's immediately aware of it and gives us the intelligence within the heart to proceed to him, to make that procession towards Krishna. So that's the psychology of Krishna consciousness. And if that helps your question. Does that help? Okay. Yes.
Why do these trying to be sincere one's endeavor to become aware? And material desires are obviously still there. Obviously it's quite dangerous position when you're talking about in between worlds in that respect of suppressing material desires and trying to encourage some spiritual desires which may not be so sort of attractive to you in that position, you know?
One has to gradually purify the mind. The mind is the seat of all desire. So, if desires remain in the mind, desires that we don't want to have, that are inhibiting our Krishna consciousness or obstructing it in some way, we have to engage our minds in such a way that they are either used for Krishna, those desires, in a way that they can be engaged in Krishna's service, or that they can be cast out of the mind. Just as certain desires like gross sense gratification, some of them may not, we may not be able to find any expression for them in Krishna consciousness. So part of Krishna's instruction to Arjuna is to withdraw the senses, just like a tortoise withdraws its limbs within the body. So there's a time when the senses have to be withdrawn. And there are more subtle desires which are not even fully exhibited, that are lying dormant in the mind. They also have to be burnt out, as Rupa Goswami says, because they can grow incubating there in the mind if we don't try to turn up the heat. And they can, after many years, they can come back as weeds strangling the devotional creeper after 20, 30, 40 years or more, and strangle our devotional service, so to speak. So one has to be introspective and see where those desires are, things that are inhibiting the flow, free flow of Krishna consciousness, and deal with them if they're obstructing our Krishna consciousness. And of course, as you said, it's about sincerity. The more sincere we are, the more we'll be willing to forego certain things if they're in the way. So the austerity means, austerity of the mind is not doing things that we may want to do sometimes, and doing things that we might ordinarily not want to do. And the measure will be when we're just thinking of Krishna constantly, morning, night, on retiring, on rising, and sleeping, where there's no thought other than Krishna. Wherever we look, we see Krishna. Whatever we do, we're thinking about Krishna. So the whole process is described somewhat in the sixth chapter on how the mind is controlled, how through yoga is to control the mind. And it says at the end of that chapter that one who is a devotee is the greatest yogi. Yogi is one who controls the mind, essentially. So, yogi namati sarvesham madgate nantaratma shradhavan vajate nam swami yukhatma. One who is constantly meditating on Krishna has mastered the yoga process. So somehow the mind has to be trained to think of Krishna. And when there's when one meditates constantly on Krishna. Krishna is the attractor of Cupid. Cupid is the root of desire for human beings. But Krishna is defined as being the attractor of Cupid. So if one develops attraction for Krishna, then even the greatest desires in the material world become insignificant. Because Krishna is the fountainhead of all desires, I mean, the attractor of all desires. The personification of love is attracted by Krishna. Madan Mohan Mahini is the attractor of Cupid. And it's also said that when one actually sees Krishna face to face, or even by inner vision through practicing yoga, Pundarikaksham, when one sees the beautiful lotus-eyed face of the Lord, then all other beauty is insignificant compared to that beauty of Krishna. So if our love develops, our sincerity will develop. If we actually love someone, we say in the material world, if one is infatuated, so to speak, in love with someone, infatuous means fool. It means one will be a fool for that person. Will do anything and everything, give one's whole life. Now that's foolish in the material world. Infatuation is considered foolish. Because it's not perfect. It's not perfect. It has to come to an end at some point. And that's, if everything else is all right, that's not all right, because our lives have to end. But to give everything to Krishna in love and devotion with full intelligence is never foolish, because Krishna takes away all our material desires and all our insincerity. So our sincerity is manifest by that willingness to give everything to Krishna. Does that help? A long answer.
I think it's obviously sort of just try and get develop that quality.
To pay a big price for any success in the material world. But the only actual price we pay to get Krishna, to get the ultimate benediction and love for Krishna, is sincerity. That's the only thing we really have to invest. Krishna's not looking at how big of a temple we can build for him, or how many pounds we can give him. He's looking for our sincerity. He looks upon a humble gift given. If it's a thing that's very dear to someone, then a very affluent, opulent, expensive gift, if it's not from a rich person, say, who could give a lot more. So that's what the price we pay is, in sincerity. You just have to remain sincere, even through all obstacles. Many obstacles will obviously come. Krishna, just like Arjuna, he was testing it. Devotional life is full of tests. And our success will be our sincerity, to just want to pass the test. It's not a matter of how much knowledge we accumulate. That's also good and helpful. But it will simply be how determined we are in our sincerity to pass those tests. Yes? Well, in one sense, God realization means self realization. We have to make a decision if we want to do this, if we really want to devote our lives to Krishna. at some point, anyway, one comes to that point. One is associating with Krishna, will want to decide, do I want to do this? Do I want to be a devotee of Krishna? Is that the way I want to be identified? What's my main purpose in life? What's my main identity in life? Am I a devotee of Krishna? So that's the first step in self-realization. Or even further back from that, do I even really want spiritual life? Is that what I want to dedicate my life to? Do I want to be a spiritualist? Or do I just want to live in this material world as best I can and at the same time do some things for Krishna now and then? Not necessarily making the goal.